Hi there, welcome to Let's Talk Tottenham. I don't know why I'm sounding so cheerful for. It's been a terrible weekend for Tottenham. Everything that could go wrong did go wrong on Saturday. And oh dear. But a lot to talk about, Three great guests on. Harry, Scarf. How is it Scarf or Scarf A? I should have asked this before.
Yeah, Scarf. No, you got it right. That's perfect.
Oh, nice one. I know you got your show at 8 o'clock, so I really appreciate you coming on and giving some of your time.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
No problem. How are you doing? Other than the football.
Yeah, no, I'm very good. Thank you. Yeah, very happy to be here. How are yourself, Chris? How are you?
Yeah, not too bad other than the football. So, yeah, good there.
Well, yeah.
And two people who have been on before, Justin. How you doing, buddy?
I've been better. And I think we'll find out shortly why I've been better. But, I'm not too bad. Thanks for having us on.
Oh, no problem. Lucky for you, Brian ain't on here because he doesn't like red shirts on Spurs streams. I've noticed there that you're wearing. I've made that mistake once, never again. And yeah, Brad, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, thanks. As can be expected. I think it's the first stream I've done with Harry. Are you aware, Harry, that in Adelaide, where I used to live, there's a department store called Harris Scarf?
Yes, I am. Yes, because when you search your name off of the internet, that always bugs me. That comes up first, and you got me below. No, it's a department store. I get told that all the time. That's great.
Yeah, so let's crack on it. I don't really want to, but we're going to have to, aren't we? Really. First things first, housekeeping, I guess. Thanks to everybody who's watching. Please hit the like, please hit the subscribe, hit the notification bell as well. Really, really helps the channel. Everyone here has a channel as well. It's in the description, but they'll let you know at the end, and Harry, when he has to jump off, where you can find all their shows. People in the chats already, get your comments and questions and everything coming in. Eugene, hi everyone, big up. Levy, hey, Al, and Ian. Sorry, Chris, out on the bike one, so I'll watch along. Appreciate that, Ian. Appreciate that. But let's start off, Harry. Not so much about the game, but something that happened during the game. We've had fans turning on each other with the Levy out, Levy in stuff. We've had it with Emerson, and now they're turning on the players again. Sanchez. There's no doubt he's not good enough for us in what we want to achieve. But to boo your own players during a game... doesn't sit right with me. And 23 minutes or something like that he was on for. And you saw that picture there, match of the day, looked distraught as well. It can only do his confidence no good at all. What did you make of the booing our own players again? We've had it with Emerson earlier in the season, but it's just really toxic atmosphere now, and it's going onto the pitch and onto the players.
Yeah, it's not something that I would do. I can understand it, you know, that the frustration's built up, you know, with Tottenham recently, or even with Sanchez personally, who hasn't, you know, had the best of times recently, that's for sure. It hasn't quite worked out for him. Long time now in Spurs, hasn't quite worked out. Yes, it's not something I do, and I don't really think I agree with. I'd rather that anger be like, you know, directed, if you like, for example, at the owners, and us fans unite together in, let's say, you know, in getting Levy, you know, to step down from his role, you know, all unite together, or there's something that the fans believe in. But right now, what you don't want is a club and a fan base that's separated, that all have, you know, different ideas, want to take different routes. It just becomes toxic. And, you know, it wouldn't be the first time it's been like that. So, yeah, I think the anger needs to be redirected, if you like, in other places, but it's certainly not something I would do.
No, I mean, he's not good enough, Sanchez, and I've lost faith in him. No, but I did feel quite sorry. I did feel quite sorry for him, because it can't be that easy. And what did you make of the game? I was out. Thankfully, I didn't have to suffer it. But go 1-0 up against Bournemouth, who are struggling for relegation. And I think we had 24 shots on goal to their 9 or something like that. But, I mean... it's all gone wrong. I'm lost for words. I don't really know what to say anymore. But what did you make of the game, and what's happened to our season?
I wish I could answer what's happened to our season, but with Tottenham, sadly, you know, you never really know, probably will know. But yeah, the stats show that, you know, we were the better team. But at the end of the day, when it comes to those important moments in the game, Bournemouth clearly wanted it more. It meant more to them. The players, you could tell, as a club. Just that crucial moments in the game, for example, when they go and get that winner, you know, that shouldn't happen. Of course, you know, at home to Bournemouth, you know, you've equalised in stoppage time. You should be able to at least get a draw, but you expect, you know, 6 minutes added time to go and push on and win that. I don't think anyone but Tottenham goes and loses that game, if I'm honest. I don't know if it's a mentality thing, but you could see Bournemouth wanted it more. They were quicker to the ball and just had that little bit more quality when they needed it. So if you're trying to look at who wanted it more and who was up for it more, who meant more to, you know, credit to Bournemouth. They came with a game plan. It was something that Bournemouth hadn't done before and Gary O'Neill hadn't done before. The different setup, you know, deal with our players like Kane and he's completely, you know, new system. And you know, you're always gonna take that risk when you're playing a, you know, big club like Tottenham. So credit to them, they came here and, you know, they were fantastic. But at the same time, we really didn't help ourselves. You know, we missed big chances, and I think all three of their goals could have easily been prevented. And was loads of mistakes again. And it doesn't give you any hope when you're playing the likes of Newcastle, Man United and Liverpool are, like we are, all in the space of what, you know, 2 weeks. And that was a must-win game. We win that, we throw ourselves in the top four battle. We could have gone joint third. You know, that's another opportunity. This missed. It's so frustrating. Yeah. And
certainly the end of the day, after Newcastle, although
stats were better, I actually think Bournemouth, you know, deserve to win because they want it more. And if a team wants it more and they leave 110%, you know, 96 minutes and still give 110%, fair play to them. Our players have given up. Mentality wasn't there.
I mean, certainly after the Newcastle game, Mark Cousins is going to be switching off. We're not talking about football, are we? Ian's no, allowed him to switch back on. No, we're just talking about Spurs. Rob Belcher's had enough. Brad, sing us a song. Doesn't want any Spurs talk. Sanchez first. What did you make of the booing? And secondly, the game. I don't really want to talk about the defence for the goals because that suggests that there's some kind of defending going on and there wasn't any of it. But in terms of the game and the Sanchez stuff, what do you make of all of that?
Well, I agree with everything that Harry said about the booing. I mean, we should have sold Sanchez two seasons ago. I mean, yeah, that's the bottom line. He's not good enough for Tottenham, or certainly not at the moment. But no, you don't boo your own players. No. The ridiculous thing about booing Sanchez was, I think after the second, I seem to remember it after the first goal, but apparently it's after the second goal. They were booing him as he was approaching the ball. How is that supposed to help a player? Yeah,
it's not, is it?
You know, it's and the thing is, it's a scapegoat. We've seen Eric Dier make mistakes. No one boos him. We've seen Lloris make mistakes. No one boos him. You know, Rekalison misses goals. We don't boo him. No. He's a scapegoat, and it goes deeper than that. It is the problems with the club and how we are at this moment in time. But you don't boo. I mean, the key is in the name. We're supporters. Support. That's where the key is. And on another level, I lay my cards on the table. I'm a bit of an old hippie, and you know, peace and love and all that sort of stuff. this is a human being we're talking about.
That's going in the preview, Brad, that you're an old hippie. That's on the preview.
Well, I'm actually an old punk stroke mod, to be fair, but my system was a hippie older than me. We go to the human aspect of it. You know, this is a human being we're talking about. Now, don't give me the bollocks about, he gets paid a lot, he can go back to his mansion and cry. No, that's rubbish. That doesn't come into it. You know, he's got a young son who luckily is probably young enough not to, you know, remember this. But can you imagine if his son was about 3 or 4 years old? Daddy, why are they booing you? You know, it's horrible. It's really horrible. Mm. And you get to the stage where these sort of players, when this happens, they're looking for any mistake. Now, the guy in front of me was on his case the whole time. Even when he came on the pitch, everyone was on his case. It's, here we go.
And well, I can understand people not wanting him to come on because, like we said,
I didn't want him on. I wanted Tanganga on.
He
had to make the change. And when he brought Sanchez off, he had to make that change. That was tactical as well, because we had to chase the game. But the guy in front of me was, and I'm not putting words in his mouth, he didn't say this, but it's almost like, oh, Sanchez, you're not running properly. Oh, Sanchez, cut your shirt in, you know. Oh, look at your hair, that's right, you know. It's wanted anything possible to criticise him. And I just do not get it. As for the game, we have to, you've met my mate Steve.
Yeah.
I went up to him in the bar afterwards and I said, we have just conceded three goals at home to a team struggling against relegation. We conceded three goals against Southampton struggling against relegation. We conceded a goal against Everton struggling against relegation. We've conceded goals in injury time in our last three games that have caused us to lose 5 points. Add 5 points to where we are now, we're in the top four race. Okay, yeah. We're probably not going to do much in the next three games, if I'm honest. But
we're likely to win them three games.
Well, that's just. I mean,
when
we beat Brighton, we just like Tottenham beat Brighton and lose against Bournemouth, you know, and that's exactly what happened. The thing about the third goal was, I mean, look, let's face it, Richarlison should have scored, you know, and that just went wide. We're not booing him, though, are we? But
no.
It wasn't like we were attacking and then the attack broke down, they broke when we're all attacking, they broke and they score. No, they got that goal from a goal kick. So we had time to reset. You know, that was obviously the last chance of the game from our point of view. You reset and you say, okay, you know, we're not going to lose this game. They got the goal kick and they score from the goal kick. Yes, we can go on about defending. Defending was awful. You know, Poirot had a poor game defensively. Yeah.
We'll be talking about him a bit more in detail, Ian.
He's not going. And let's face it, the first goal wasn't Sanchez's fault. I mean, he shouldn't maybe. But Poirot had enough time to get rid of that ball. And he lost possession. And he lost possession. Lloris, don't know what Lloris was doing, literally coming out on the floor, you know, so it was easy for the guy just to, you know, so it's all round bad defensive display. But
all three were absolutely shocking. Yeah. But, Justin Redshirt, what do you think? Justin, what do you make of the whole Sanchez thing? And we've seen it before with Emerson and the game as a whole. Score a goal, go kill them off. No, we sit back, then chase the game later on. But what do you make of those two things?
Well, I think in start off with the Sanchez thing, I think the problem is it's systemic of where the problems are at this football club. You know, it's the best way to describe it is like the Titanic without a captain. You know, he's just a ship that's just hit the iceberg. Nobody's there. No one's got a clue what's going on. And it just felt like that Sanchez was the scapegoat, you know. And
we've had it before, you know, with Winks, we've had it with Dyer, we've had it with Emerson.
If you look at everyone who's out on loan, you could look at all of them. They're all scapegoats for it. Now, some of them I feel is very harsh. I don't think it's harsh on Ndombele because I think he made it very clear on that game against, was it Morecambe?
Yeah, agreed.
That he clearly wasn't bothered and he couldn't care less. So that's one when a player gets booed because... I do understand the frustration when people say players shouldn't or fans shouldn't boo their own players. But when players like Ndombele can't be bothered and do what they did at Morecambe, absolutely, I'm sorry, you deserve that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
You know, I feel that when it comes to the Davinson Sanchez thing, I think the problem is that he has been made a scapegoat for the fact that the fans don't want to pile in on the owners. I want to pile in with this ridiculous scenario that we have been fed up. Because if you take it further back, if you take it to Conte's interview, you know, when he absolutely, people say, lost it, ranted about the players and everything else like that, nobody has been able to come out and say what he said was wrong. What they said was how he went about it was wrong. So what he said was factually correct.
Mm.
And what the club have decided to do is, in effect, cut off the head but keep the rest of the body in terms of what Stellini is. This is, you know, old to me. When I saw that Stellini was going to be given, you know, when you look at it, and this is part of where the problem ultimately is lying, is the fact that, you know, I get quite frustrated, and I think this is where the fans have seen it from, because people turn around and will say to me, oh, you know, it is a cultural thing to drop deep, it's a cultural thing to do this, you know, they, you know, players shouldn't be doing it, this, that and the other. Okay, but last time I checked our bench, you know, so the bench of players and the players who didn't come out on there, you know, I mean, we've got, I don't know who George Abbott was, but he was on the bench. Tanganga, we got Alfie Devine, we got Pape Sarr, you know. If you're telling me that a group of players are systemic in terms of how they are going to approach football matches, which, as you rightly said, is get the first and not kill the game off. If you're not going to turn around and you're not going to say to these players, I'm sorry, you are clearly not listening to what I'm telling you, so I'm going to bring somebody else in. Mm. I don't care if it's a kid. I don't care if it is, you know, because we had that, was his Mundell was his name? You know, the Romain Mundell or something like that. who they've been raving about and are trying to convince him to sign a new deal. Well, he's not going to sign a new deal if he's basically got a bunch of idiots in front of him who can't listen to simple instructions. And his reward is, well, I'm not going to give you a chance because I don't believe you're going to be any better than them. Well, hang on a minute. If the bunch of idiots can't turn up at home in front of 61,000 and actually put a you know, put a performance on, then why shouldn't we? I think, to be fair, this is part of where the problem. And yes, I do not agree. Ultimately, I thought about it backwards and forwards, and I don't agree with what happened to Davinson Sanchez. But ultimately, Davinson Sanchez, I think, was picked out because Davinson Sanchez was the personification of everything that is wrong at the football club. Not him as a person, not him as a person, but it is somebody
just the
who
quality,
has,
you mean.
Well, yeah. It's not even the quality. It's the fact that consistently has failed, consistently hasn't been moved on, has been allowed to fail, and we as a club seem to accept that, you know. And the one thing I feel sorry for Davinson Sanchez is Davinson Sanchez hasn't turned around and said, well, I'm going to stay here. You know, he's made it very, he's come out and been like, the club want to sell me, they'll sell me. I'm not going to stay if the club doesn't want me. So, you know, he unfortunately, by the nature of his poor performances, falls into the category of the likes of, and I personally feel if you were going to be more critical of anybody, that should be Eric Dyer. You know, this is a guy who's been there long enough. You know, we're going to be giving him a new 3-year contract, which honestly, when they announce that, don't ask me on any shows because I'll be sat in a corner crying while you'll also be, heavily throwing up with my red shoes on, clicking the heels, hoping that someone can take me home. That's all I'm going to be doing, okay?
Well, you're going to be crying a bit later on because we're going to be talking about that later on, I'm afraid.
No, I know, but in terms of it, to me, that is where I think the problem is. It's the stupidity of the fans to go after a player who ultimately, it's only a personification of the failure of the club because the club aren't prepared to get rid of him. They are prepared to accept him as an average player. And when you look at that squad and you look at those players, you look at, okay, well, yes, you know, we could take the fact of certain games, we've got a point here or a few points there, we'd be in a higher position. But wouldn't that just be, I think what Brad said, wouldn't that just be papering over the cracks of the fact that this ownership would then be deemed to be a success? In a way, what we're seeing now is almost back to, not before Pochettino arrived, but almost back to when Martin Jol was arrived, you know, when the things were totally a mess and we were sort of after the hoddle days and the club was all over the show and it didn't know what it wanted to be or what it wanted to achieve. And it almost felt that that's how far we've gone back. So I don't agree with the fact that they targeted Davinson Sanchez. The problem being is that he personifies what's wrong with the club. And I don't think the fans were prepared to ultimately go after the biggest villain in all this, which is, unfortunately, Daniel Levy.
Yeah.
How many goals have we conceded this season so far?
Oh, no idea.
45?
Something like that. We're in the lowest half. And bear in mind, one thing to mention as well, if we're meant to be a serious top four team, I know that you mentioned the teams we conceded against. One that you didn't mention, Brad, was the fact we got stuffed 4-1 by Leicester.
Oh, yeah, and lost to Wolves as well.
This is the part of me that ultimately is absolutely stunned about this club and this football team's mentality.
I just got to jump in. Harry, I know you need to leave. But very quickly, do you think the players care? Because there was one bit where Højbjerg went in for 50-50, got clipped a little bit. Rather than get up, he looked up, then went down, rolled over. It was when the chance that led to Richarlison getting the header from the corner. But it could have easily gone the other way. Do you think they care and they're just coasting along and they don't really mind that much, aren't really willing to get stuck in? Which I think begs the question, stick a Devine in, stick Mundell in, stick this person in. What do you think's going on there? Well, do they care, or are they just not very good?
Well, I don't think anybody can say that, you know, they are. They do care because, you know, we've been making excuses to them for a long time. Managers previously now have called them out. Conte to be the latest one. We can't keep hiding from the fact that, you know, we may have, for example, I think the problem obviously starts with Levy, you know, the owners, that is the main issue, but the players as well, they are a big problem. You know, they've now let managers down, it's the lack of effort. You know, for me, I'm on the pitch, I'm giving 110%, even if it means we play three games a week, even if I physically couldn't do it, you know, I'd leave everything on the pitch. Are these players giving 110% and going home at night, you know, absolutely exhausted, thinking, oh, you know, I really worked hard, you know, we deserve that. I mean, I don't think so. Against Bournemouth wanted it more on those important stages. Yeah, we huffed and puffed at times, put a few crosses in the box. You know, we never really looked that dangerous, and we never really, it sounds silly, really, saying we didn't try to score, if you know what I mean. But when we got in those moments, Bournemouth were aggressive, that they cared, you know, that they can. I mean, obviously people say, oh yeah, they're fighting to stay in the Premier League, but we should be fighting for top four. Champions League is a big competition.
I agree.
It's a terrible season, but give it absolutely everything. You know, I just don't get, I mean, I love Højbjerg, but again, this season hasn't been good enough. Like you said, moments like that, players just stop. And it really bugs me when, like, for example, a player's lost a tackle and they stop, they've given it up already. Again, you know, myself, I'll keep going. You never know. You can always get back. At least try. And I think the bare minimum, you know, for a player is to put 110% in.
Yeah,
we can lose 3-2 to Bournemouth. But if we tried a bit harder, you know, if we'd left everything on the pitch, and we'd been attacking to the final whistle. But when Bournemouth scored that goal, there was no time. No, they weren't even going to try anyway. They're just waiting for the whistle to go. I mean, I don't like the. I don't have his mentality.
You're getting told this is our cup final. We've got 8 cup finals, you know?
We've got 8 cup finals. Yeah. We don't turn up for any of them. We turn up
every time I hear the word cup final now, I die a little more inside. It's pathetic. It's clear they don't care.
We go again. We go again, Justin. We go again.
Oh, jeez. That's the other one. We go again. Another cup final.
Harry, I know
you never learn, though. You never learn.
I know you need to jump off, Harry, to do your show. Really appreciate you coming on for
thank you for having me.
And even though you've got your show to prepare for. But it's in the description. But for people who don't know, where can people find? Well, it's on YouTube.
Yeah, thank you very much. You've got my Twitter handle there. Yeah, channel Scarfy Spurs. Well. Yeah, thank you. On the route for 500. Thank you for having me on today. You can find me every Saturday, 11 a.m. I'm one of 4 co-hosts of Parkland Podcast. I now have my own podcast every Monday, 8 p.m. And yeah, as I said, you can find my Twitter handle there. I'm quite active on there, creating content. As I said, the podcast is the latest thing, and lots more to come, I'm sure. But yeah, lots of content for this week. Thank you for having me on. It's been an absolute pleasure. If you have me again, you know, I'd love to come on.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Come on for a bit longer, but no, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, I really appreciate you coming on, sparing a little bit of your time, even though you've got yours prepared for. But yeah,
don't steal
all of my watches just yet.
I won't. I'll tell them to wait.
Excellent. Cheers, best. Harry. And
cheers, guys. Have a good evening.
See you later.
Cheers, Harry. A couple of comments just before we move on. The dire situation, which will make Justin quite, makes me question how a decision can be made like this when we don't have a manager. Oh, that's another thing. To say whether he is part of their plans. We're not the only club that operates like this either. The only positive Saturday with a Levy out on Poch songs. But Brad, you were talking about the goals we've conceded.
Yeah, I was just saying that this is, you know, what Justin was saying. We've conceded, well, I think it's definitely 40-plus goals this season. That's in 31 games. In the last season at White Hart Lane under Pochettino, we conceded 26 goals. So we're on target to have conceded twice as many goals this season. Now, in that season, we had Alderweireld and Vertonghen playing, and Walker and Rose. We lost over the years. Vertonghen and that got older. We lost them. We lost Walker. We never replaced them. We've still yet to replace Vertonghen and Alderweireld. You could argue that we replaced one of them I think Romero is you know, could become
Is he though? Because he's been touted as potentially world class, but he didn't on Saturday. But if he keeps getting sent off, going in with ridiculous challenges, that's going to hinder him being world class.
Yeah,
and we were under the cosh, and then he's trying a little drag back and back heel to his defender.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that
in the first half, which led to a Lloris save. If you're a world class defender, you you do that when you're 5-0 up, 2 minutes left. You don't do that when you're under the cosh in the pressures of the game, and you just you smack someone in the face in Vaux Z.
Ledley King and Alderweireld were two of the best timers of attacker I've seen to win the ball back. And I think Romero's got it in him. I've seen Romero get that ball back with exquisite timing.
Yeah.
But problem is sometimes it just quite get it right. And
bless you.
To be fair, what I would say to that, Brad, is that the difficulty I think Romero has got is what he's playing, what he has got in his defence, what he's having to work with. And I think the difficulty that he is having is that if you look at it, he's got Eric Dier, who I know that I've said my piece, but if you ask me again, I will say something a bit stronger, and then that's on you, Chris, if I do.
Last 10 minutes, you can say what the bloody hell you want.
In which case, he is horseshit. He is absolutely god-awful. I mean, when he went into the stands, he should have kept on going through the exits and carried on through. That's as far as it is.
Maybe I should have clubbed him as he walked past me then.
I just look at Eric Dier again. I just feel that is a player who, again, personifies everything that's wrong at Tottenham. You know, rather than just... It's just a mediocre player who is able to comfortably know there's no one going to come in ahead of him. The club aren't going to bring anybody in because he meets a lot of homegrown qualities. You know,
he doesn't, does he? He's not for Champions League anyway. Yeah, he's not glass champion.
No, he doesn't for that, but he does for the Premier League. So,
The
fact of it being is that we've seen it when certain players reach a level, and when they're playing with certain players, their standards will drop. And you've got to look at it that, you know, the difficulty of Romero is I wouldn't blame him, he clearly doesn't trust what he's got around him. You know, and ultimately, this is where that defence as a whole, how on earth it made Bournemouth look like world beaters, I will never know. But they did. They managed it. Bournemouth looked, you know, brilliant going forward. And I'm surprised they only scored. Because I think the stats, I know that to be fair, you know, you look at in terms of the shots that we had. But if you look at the amount that we had on target, I saw that.
I've been horseshit. It's detrimental to horseshit.
That was great.
Sorry to any horseshit that's offended by me classifying as Eric Dier. I take it back. But the problem being is that defence and that goalkeeper.
He's a big, big problem, I think.
Isn't good enough. But everything is a that'll do. You might as well change Tottenham Hotspur Football Club to that'll do football club because, you know, if a player, if we could ultimately, and this is where I think it comes into, if we're competing, because that's what seems to be the big thing when it comes to this football club, is competing, not winning, competing. If you listen to all the dialogue, you know, they laud the fact that we've been in Europe 17 out of the last 18 seasons and the fact that we've now got the Conference League, I think you can almost finish bottom and be in the Europe. So, you know, it's not going to change anything from that aspect. But when you actually look at what is needed to fix this football team, there are two massive problems. Number one, the club will not pay for that. And number two, they won't risk the gamble of turning around and accepting a year out of the Champions League and maybe finishing an eighth or a ninth or a tenth and blooding in some of these younger players, you know, the Will Lanarkshire that we've got, you know, you said Alfie Devine, you know, Romain Mundell, play out, you know, people like that and actually bringing them through. And what is really, and I can kind of understand. I personally don't want him back. And I know it might be something we come on to later on, but I can understand the logic behind people wanting Pochettino because of the fact that actually you saw with some of the players he brought through that actually he was prepared to do that. It was only towards the end when it became more and more apparent it was top four or bust that he went back tried and trusted.
But that's why the whole appointment of Conte and Jose.
Might as well put Josie in. She might do a better job.
In hindsight, was a ridiculous pair of appointments because we're a club historically that want to play attractive attacking football. want to play youth, not bring youth players through, and don't want to spend an absolute fortune in doing it on ready-made players in those positions. We want to coach young players into those things. And Jose and Conte's coaching, for me, revolves around, this is how I play, get used to the system, go out and play. Whereas Pochettino was a Tottenham fit. He brought through youth. He played attractive football. If it wasn't working, he would look to the youth. He'd give them all chances. And he could work on a budget. So Conte and Jose were the complete opposite. So in hindsight... Yes. In hindsight, ridiculous appointments because Levy wasn't going to change the philosophy.
Yes, and no with that, because the problem being was, and this is one of the things I've spoken about before, Jose and Conte were on what, 15 million a year?
Something like that.
Yeah, so if you take how much Tottenham made in terms of being in the Champions League under Conte, you know, and in terms of competing and things like that, the problem is that as tragic as it is from a financial aspect, it's cheaper to get in one of those managers for a year or two, get us into the top four, because you instantly make, what, 40, 50 million quid? You've paid for Conte. Conte getting us into the Champions League paid for him, okay? Yeah. And it will probably have paid for a percentage of Mourinho. And this is ultimately where... They were always quick fixes, not to the board. The board just believed that by having that name across the door, it would change everything. But they always knew if we could get top four, that was a cheaper option than the £300 million it would cost to fix the problem longer term. Because that is ultimately everything that has been done. And I read a tweet that was put out by Paul O'Keefe, which I thought was absolutely spot on, is the club isn't run by businessmen, it's run by spreadsheets. You know, we are spreadsheet FC. It is basically a case of working out how to make a profit, how to minimize the loss. We know that the top four will make us that. That is why ultimately people are very critical of Conte as to why he didn't go after the cup. Why did he not start Harry Kane? So on and so forth. Nobody would have. If you're in his position, nobody would have, because that's not the priority. The priority isn't to win at this football club. It honestly isn't. As we saw, if anybody believes this football club was destined to trying to win anything, it can be summed up with the fact that Mourinho was sacked a week before a cup final.
I mean, that for me is why appoint the bloke?
But it's because of the fact it's the name and it's the stature it brings and what it brought in terms of being able to bring revenue to the football club.
There's a lot of reasons for why Mourinho was sacked, but I think one of the reasons was that was going on during the Super League.
It was. The club used it as an opportunity to flex. Yeah. But also, the other thing as well, and this sums up Tottenham to a T, is the reason they sacked him at that point wasn't for the final. I think I read that had he won his next game, which was Southampton at home, which at that time wasn't difficult, had he won the cup final, I think it would have cost the club an extra £5 to £10 million to sack him. So that is ultimately, again, where profit and loss came into it.
Yeah, absolutely ridiculous.
What I don't understand is the fact that if you aim high, if you aim for winning titles, like look at, and I won't say Man City because they've got millions and millions and millions and billions and billions. Look at Arsenal this season. Now, we're all going to laugh if they don't win the title, but they're guaranteed Champions League football. You know, that's just going to happen as a consolation. And that's what we had for a couple of seasons under Pochettino. We weren't even thinking about getting top four. We were thinking about winning the title.
Yeah.
And then when we didn't win the title,
you know what? I've said this on channels and I've been hounded for it and things like that. It pains me to say it, but if Arsenal won the title, I wouldn't have a problem with it, okay? All these people that have come out and been, you know, it's funny, they're bottling it and this, that and the other. If they actually won the title, there's two things to take into account. Number one, we finished above them last year, right? With some brilliant football we were playing. But what Arsenal did is they have continuously backed a manager over a period of time. You know, if I guarantee you this, if Arteta was at Tottenham, he'd have been sacked already and twice on Sunday. Okay. Oh, yeah. he would not have lasted because of the years that he has failed to get that team into the Champions League. Forget the trophy, forget the FA Cup he's won, forget the fact he's competing for the top four. He would have been sacked because the primary aim at Tottenham at the moment is top four. I don't care what anybody else says, you know, and I still to this day can't get my head around when I see young players signing new contracts at Spurs or young players coming to Tottenham. I think, why?
Well, we're going to get a manager in the we're going to get a manager in the summer, I think, that will believe in youth, whether that's Pochettino, whether that's Potter, whether that's someone else. So I think they will be getting their chance next season. But in the current regime, in terms of the manager, that is, they won't. But he ain't going to be there long term.
No, but then ultimately, again, you say that, Chris, but what ultimately is going to be that the new man's objective? Let's face facts. Yeah. When Nuno's objective, as ridiculous as it was hiring him in the first place, was to get top four. I mean, he was the idiot who came out and said he was going to make us proud. When he certainly achieved that when he got booed and sacked. But you know, we've seen throughout that ultimately it doesn't matter what the fans want, right? Because the club don't care. You know, as we've seen, nobody has made any statements. No one is coming out and saying anything. There's nothing from that. All I've seen today from the club is talking about the under-17s. You know, there is no interest in wanting to address. And I'm sorry, if Daniel Levy or the club truly, you know, were not away with the fairies or wherever else they were, they would have seen the Levy out chance. They would have seen the Pochettino chance. And when you have to, and this is the part that saddens me the most, when you have to be the guy with the sole objective, the moment the full-time whistle goes, is to pump that music on as loud as you can.
God,
can't hear people booing.
Good song, though. It was a good song on Saturday.
It was a beautiful song. I'm not going to dispute that. But ultimately, that in itself sums up how far of a disconnect and how little that the owners care about the fans. Because what they would have looked at, and I think you brought it up earlier, was the fact that the 61,000 turned up. 61,000 were there, you know, and were paying their money, were buying the food, were buying the match programs, everything else, were enjoying the people singing in the, you know, the bits round on, you know, what have you. They were all enjoying that. So the fact of it being is that they can serve up any old crap on the pitch because they know that money's being pumped in from other places. So they don't truly care, I think, about that. And I think that's where, coming back in a little bit to the whole Davinson Sanchez thing, whilst I don't agree with it, I can understand it, because what it has done is it's highlighted a massive problem at the football club. You know, the fact of it being is if it had been a case of that people had just booed and, you know, shouted Levy out and things like that. Yes, I saw on Twitter, you know, Brian Daigle put, you know, a picture up of the Enoch Out protests that were there. So they are getting mainstream, but that is slow. You think how long, bless him, he has been doing that for. Yet the fans pick on a player, hound that player straight away in the press. Bang on. Everybody's all over it. And that is unfortunately where, you know, the club is at, is that they have allowed to create a fool guy who, no fault of his own, doesn't want to be there himself and is there because he's forced to be. So, you know, I do feel sorry from that aspect. But ultimately, that is where we've gotten to now these days.
Yeah, I mean, Brad, come on to this now. Bournemouth had a plan. We didn't. Gary O'Neill, very brave. I think Harry mentioned that. I think probably looked at it with, we don't really want to play quickly. We certainly don't really want to play out from the back, but we have to press them as a team. They were pressing as a team. We were pressing as individuals here or there. And so all credit to Brighton and Gary O'Neill. They deserve their win. Even though we had a lot more shots, they deserve their win. Stellini, though, he came out and said, I told them to attack. We didn't, after we scored the first goal. He's also said, there's all these mistakes that keep happening. Why is he picking the same team? Why is he picking the same players that he quoted as saying and making the same mistakes? Yeah, it might not be the best quality. Alfie Devine might not be the very good, but at least he'll give it a go. And like I said earlier, he'll care because he want to force his way into that first team. Fraser Forster did nothing wrong in his tenure there, and yet some guy who can't even catch a cold, you know, in the Antarctic with just a T-shirt on, gets put straight back in because he's got a captain's armour.
I'll be worried a bit more about what I catch.
I don't understand how he can go straight back in.
Yeah,
and Stellini's got to take big credit, and Conte's system didn't work, so we've then got someone in who's playing Conte's system. Absolutely ridiculous. A big opportunity for Stellini to put his stamp. He said before, I want to be a number one. This was your big chance to put a stamp on it. Get us attacking, playing quick football.
Well,
for me, I keep interrupting. Apologies, Brad, but for me, he's just as bad as Conte was at the end. So it's just not working at all. We need an attacking manager. At least we'll be entertaining. At least we'll be trying to win games and trying to kill teams off, regardless of what players we have on the pitch.
I think he is. I'm not using this as an excuse. I think he is slightly restricted through the injured players that we have. That said, Alfie Devine was on the bench. Dan Juma was on the bench. And even Tanguy was on the bench when Lenglet had to go off injured. So he has got some options there. But I really think, as I've said on many, many shows before, he's been given this remit, Champions League football. And he doesn't want to change the system because the system, until Conte left, had got us into fourth. So why not continue with it? Unfortunately, I don't agree with that. I think we should have got a new manager in and forgot about Champions League football and just, you know, use the last 10 games as a pre-season. But I think that's what's happened. And I still believe that it's the players rather than what they've been told to do. I really do. And I've noticed with Tottenham, and it's been going on for years now, Tottenham, when they look confident, and I looked at the score. I actually looked at the scoreboard on Saturday and I thought, oh, I thought we were 2-0 up because I thought we were comfortable. After about 20, 25 minutes, 1-0 up, got the early goal, 1-0 up. I thought, oh, I thought it was 2-0. Then we have the injury problem. Sanchez comes on. We have the problem. The crowd gets on top of them and they panic. They absolutely panicked. And they do this all the time. We look in control, then suddenly we panic. We're in control against Everton. And then we thought, oh no, drop back, panic.
That one was just
it's
unbelievable.
So many times. And now whether you put it down to I think they're very nervy. I think the whole thing of this football club at the moment is this nervousness and this, oh, the worst is gonna happen. So when Bournemouth start to attack, when Brighton starts to attack, oh no, and the crowd get nervous, and when they try and pass it among the back, you know, I mean, you saw that. Pass from Perisic in the first half. It's literally a cross. And luckily, I think it was Romero or someone just chested down to Lloris.
He
got the ball and they didn't know where to go with it. So he literally crossed it back into his own box.
This is a player who's won Champions Leagues and got into finals of World Cup. So you actually don't expect that from him. You expect him to be the one dragging them forward.
Attacking-wise, he actually didn't have a bad game. That's one of the better games I've seen him play attacking-wise. And the goal was good, and it was the pass from Longley to Perisic was good. But I've noticed for Tottenham, as soon as things start going wrong, as soon as the other team starts getting a foothold in the game, we just panic. Whereas the previous Tottenham teams, when we've been doing good, don't. They just keep at what they're doing. And I really don't believe that the coaching is saying, when you get one up, they all sit back. I really don't believe that.
He's got to make changes if they're not listening to him. And they didn't listen this week. They did last week and they will next week.
It hasn't surprised me. We played the same 11 in the last two or three games.
No.
But it's interesting that Dan Juma came on and I think he's now in five matches. He hasn't started it in five matches. He's had around about 90 minutes of football. Right, he scored two goals.
Yeah, you know, we'll talk about made him a difference. Bit later. Yeah, he made the only a difference. Positive thing we can talk about. Yeah.
So surely he's got a chance because Kulusevski, he's doing all the work, right? But then it's the final ball. Why not give Dan Juma a job? Why I say Alfie Devine on the bench? We need a bit of creativity. Yeah. You know, we got two Højbjerg and at least with Højbjerg and Bentancur could control the ball and keep it ticking over. we've got two similar players now in Skip and Højbjerg, and yeah, they do their best, of course they do, but they just you know, we're not, we've got no attacking things there, you know, and it's really frustrating. Like the start of your show said, I'm just waiting for let's finish the season.
Yeah. You
know, I mean, I've got three home games to go now on my season ticket. One of the games, I'll probably get the Man United game because, you know, Tommy, as you know, is coming up. So,
yeah.
Chance to catch up with him. But the other two games, Palace and Brentford at home,
yeah.
You know, I'm seriously considering not going to those. So,
I can't go to the Brentford one, thank God, because I'm at a wedding, but Palace, I'm not sure. But Ian in the chat. Sorry, winning trophies, making money, not mutually exclusive. My view increasingly is that if we have a football board excluding Levy making football decisions, we'll be okay. I just don't think that will happen, Ian. He has to be in control.
That's the problem. He's
been a control freak. I don't think he'll relinquish that power. The Conte Light experiment clearly hasn't worked. And Jamie in Manila, 3 a.m. Hey, thanks, Jamie. So much for watching and making sure you're up for the show. See, back in Blighty, Levy and Lewis are still leading the sheep. Give our club back. Justin, I think Brad made a good point with no playmaker or anyone in the middle. Bentancur has been a huge miss. I think part of the, you know, looking like lost sheep at the back and the headless chickens is there's no one to keep the ball. And I think one of the best things that Dembele and Eriksen did was when the going got tough, those two primarily got on the ball, dictated everything for 5 minutes. Momentum was stopped. Then we go again. Any worries that we have has been quashed because that hasn't happened anything for 5 minutes. We don't have anyone like that at the moment, and they're all looking to each other. What do we do? What do we do? The other team must sense that, and that's why they go for the juggler. The Everton game that Brad mentioned, I couldn't really believe what I was seeing there. Against 10 men, 1-0 up, go kill the game off, that you've got an extra player. And I just don't really understand it. I think if we get a playmaker in, which I can only assume we will, because I'm adamant and convinced that we'll get an attacking manager. And for an attacking manager, you generally need someone who can pass the ball. So whether that's Alfie Devine gets his chance, whether that's a Maddison comes in, which I'm not sure about, or someone else, I think we'll get a playmaker in. I think that'll solve some problems. We still have the issue of the defence. And the out-of-field team, because they had Dembele and Eriksen, they hardly had any touch of the ball when we didn't have the ball. So in terms of the pressure on them, it was very minimal. Whereas now we're getting 30% of the possession and the teams are going for the jugular as soon as they get the ball, knowing that our defence is going to be put under pressure. So I think our defence would look better if we had a playmaker or two. It wouldn't be ideal because, let's face it, they're not good enough. But it's just, there's no plan at all going forward. And it's just, like you said, I think this will do and it won't. But I just, well, I don't really have a question here. I just go on rambles and then go on. And then
No. I mean, don't worry, Chris. I'll see if I can pick something out from that rant. That's fine. You have a sip of your cocoa and carry on just having a moment. That's fine. I get what you mean, but I think the problem you have, and one of the things that will be very, very interesting is to see what happens in two stages. The one will be on Wednesday, because that's when we'll know if Paratici is staying in his job or not. I think pathetically, this club has decided it can't make any decisions without him, even though, you know, clearly the only decisions he can make are dodgy ones. You know, and I'm not even talking about the ones he made for us. You know, geez, you know, he was one who said we should get Nuno and Brian Hill. So enough said with that. But you look at it and you think, obviously, that's one instance. I think the club is why it's stagnant, even though it seems to not be able to realise that actually by doing nothing, it's costing us its opportunity in being in the top four and keeping Harry Kane.
I think he's off. He cannot possibly want to stay.
I would honestly, do you know what I would love, Chris? I would, if there was a way I could buy a ticket to watch Harry Kane sit there and Daniel Levy sit the other side and listen to Daniel Levy try and sell staying at Tottenham. Because honestly, Harry Kane would be sat there and thinking, I'm going. Yeah. I'm going. You've lied through your teeth. year after year after year, I don't believe you. Yeah. And the reason I don't believe you, because your lips are moving. If you keep them shtum, maybe I'll believe you, you know. But yeah, ultimately, he would need a contract like Mbappe's, where he chooses the manager, he chooses the players, and things like that. It's the only way Harry Kane is staying at this football club.
I mean, he'll stay in the summer.
He's our next manager. Harry Kane's our next manager. There you go.
Harry Kane FC. Didn't Pep say that? Pep Guardiola did say we're Harry Kane FC.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how true it was.
He'll probably stay for next season because Levy will put too much of a price tag on him. But yeah, if he does that, I cannot believe he'll stay next season and renew, and he'll just go, I'll just walk out.
He's got, there's nothing. There's no reason. I guarantee you this. He will be in a United shirt next year because two things, you know, I think the thing is with that, people turn around and say, oh, you know, yeah, he's not going to sell him at any price. Money talks, right? He wasn't going to sell Berbatov. He sold Berbatov. Hmm. He wasn't going to sell Luka Modric. He sold Luka Modric, right? Any player, when a money talks and Daniel Levy is thinking to himself, I'm going to lose this player for nothing, is thinking, I can't do that. It's that business head on his head. He did it with Gareth Bale as well.
Yeah, I do think it's slightly different. This is a guy that is Tottenham through and through, record goal scorer, and the fact that when he sold Berbatov and Bale, he wasn't anywhere near as hated as he is now. And if he sells Harry Kane, followers are just going to gain.
Let's take this the other side. Okay, so let's say we see that through. Let's say Daniel Levy says, no, you're not going, right? Yeah. And Daniel Levy does what everybody knows what Daniel Levy is going to do, which is ultimately try and come up with a club that can compete for top four, okay? Doesn't win anything. And then Harry Kane leaves for nothing, right? That is kicking a can down the road. And ultimately, what you've got to look at is, at least if he's put £100 million on the balance sheet, people will look at it and go, well, maybe he will spend it, okay? Badly, because I remember the horrible seven that he bought when Gareth Bale came in, you know? And, you know, I only remember them because I have a lot of cold shivers and nightmares over those, six of the seven, because Christian Eriksen wasn't too bad. But Kyrkaez...
Lamella was okay. Mm.
Okay, I mean, Chris, that does define straight from the bottom of the barrel. Five and a half. Yeah, there we go. Okay, so two out of the seven you could kind of accept. But when you're sitting there, and what was it, Paulinho and
Brazilian Frank Lampard, Paulinho.
That was it.
Well, Soldado, I felt sorry for, because Soldado was a player that if you get the ball in the box for him, he's lethal. We decide he's our only player forward. Everyone else is behind the halfway line. Go and do your stuff. And it's just it's again just buying stuff that you either don't need or can't accommodate, and just stupid decision making from people who don't know anything about football.
This is where it's going to be interesting, because as I said, we've got the 19th where we're going to work out what is going to happen with Paratici. And then in July, Scott Munn comes in. And ultimately, what we're going to work out with him is whether he is actually going to take the reins off of Levy, or he is in the greatest job ever. Because if it is the latter, I can do that job. I can do Scott Munn's job, and I guarantee I'll do it for half the price, because I can sit there and go, yes, Daniel Levy. Yes, Daniel Levy. No, Daniel Levy. Three bags full. Excellent. There's my money. Thank you very much. Do what you want. You go play in the corner and don't eat your crayons. You know, it's kind of that sort of where we're at. Is that it is a kid just wanting it all to be his way. And whoever he's put there will just, if they're happy to put up with it, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, I know we're probably going to come on to in a minute who's going to be the next manager, but...
Well, let's come on to it now, because we've got quite a lot of comments. But Terry Wright, I didn't really think of this. Because of the current state of the club, I think Levy will have a very difficult time recruiting a top manager or a young up-and-coming manager like Kompany. It's a poison chalice. Paratici, if he keeps him, shame on the club. The man's a cheat and a fraud. The fact that he's still there is shame on the club.
Yeah.
Ian... my choice is Postecoglou. I think I've pronounced that right.
Yes,
Slot would be another good view, a good appointment. Terry Wright said, I like Slot, but might be the next Ajax manager.
Ajax and Feyenoord are quite big rivals, aren't they?
And he's responded to Terry there saying, I think it might be right. Tottenham is a bigger gig than Ajax. Just think we need the right kind of manager and certainly not one who thinks he's doing us a favour being our manager. I mean, like you said earlier, Justin, money talks, so you never know.
What they were saying about Arne Slot and Ange Postecoglou and things like that. One of the things that will turn around and will intrigue managers is the next two of us. One of the things that I think will intrigue, and one of the things is that is always intrigued managers, is when you sit there and you think, well, I could maybe get that working.
Mm.
Look what I would be. If you take, give you as an example, let's say Arne Slot comes in, he revolutionised the club. The club wins, you know, the FA Cup and it wins the Conference League and things like that. And it gets into top four. He is godlike. And when you look at that, that is what will intrigue anybody who is interested in the job or is thinking about the job. Because the standard in terms of what the fans want is so low that all you need to do is win a trophy, get top four. You're better, you know. Nobody could then turn around and go, oh, Pochettino was better. What, he got top four? That's all he got. You win a trophy. People will always remember Juan de Ramos and George Graham because they're the last two that won a trophy with a football club. You know, they are the ones that people remember. You win a trophy and you get top four, you are golden. And people will look at it and will think, I can do that. Mm. Oh, that's all I've got to do is do that. And you think about it, you could just, you know, I remember hearing when Vincent Kompany scored a goal against Leicester and Gary Neville said, where do you want your statue? You do that, you ask where you want your statue. You know, the fans will make it. You know, the club won't because it'll cost them too much money. But, you know, the fans will
it'll
make
it. It'll be a papier-mâché one and get soaked in the rain.
It'll probably be one of our, it'll probably be one of our other trophies that we've had that get made into one and sort of moulded or melted into it or something. But that is where people turn around. And I understand when people say it's a poison chalice and things like that. But all you've got to do is top four in a trophy and you are God.
In terms of Soldado, all his goals for Valencia, direct quick passes into the box under Yol, it was all intricate football. He had no chance. I thought it was AVB, but and
it was
Yol at least played attacking football, so there would have been people there. So he would have got ricochets and been
the interesting thing with the Yol one is I think he would have suited better Yol because Yol, that was what he did with Berbatov. Berbatov did nothing else. Yol just said, stay up top. Berbatov, we'll give you the ball, you do, you know, kind of with that, and then we'll have like Robbie Keane feeding there and you can work with him and, you know, other sort of players that were there or thereabouts. But it was almost a case of that all Soldado needed was somebody just to feed the ball into the box and him do the rest.
Yeah, I think it'd have been good with an attacking manager. And Terry Wright, it's a scary thought, but Rodgers might be who we end up with. If that happens, I'm going to support NHL full-time. My team there, if you can believe such a thing, are worse than Tottenham at the moment. I'd rather do that. I can see Potter going to West Ham. I wouldn't mind Potter. I think he fits our mould. I know he's had a bad time at Chelsea and it's another Chelsea reject, but plays young players. Attacking football brings through youth.
I had to laugh last night. I was watching a recording. There's a TV program on the weekend with Professor Brian Cox, and it's about Mars and the Mars rover. And the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, it's run by NASA. That's they build all the rockets. They put all the rovers on Mars, the, you know, Cassini, all that sort of thing. And when you go in their front office, they've got this big sort of desk, and their motto is dare to be mighty. And I had to laugh because that sounds very similar, but behind them, behind the desk, it's this massive, massive trophy cabinet with all of these trophies in it for various things over G.
Well, it can't have been like Spurs because, as you said, there are a lot of trophies.
But when I saw that, dare to be mighty, and I thought, well, yeah, they've done that. They put things on Mars. They put things on comets. So dare to be mighty. They bloody have. And yet,
fake the moon landings as well.
Dare is to do, and it's like, well, no. When was the last time we dared to do anything?
Do you know what? I must admit, if somebody turned around to me and said, right, you got to choose who the manager would be, it'd have to be Thomas Frank.
He'd be my pick, unless Nagelsmann was realistic, which I don't think it is.
If Nagelsmann was realistic, he'd have been done by now. Because
one of the things that
I think we've seen with Tottenham is, and particularly Daniel Levy, is he can polish up a turd, he can sprinkle it in glitter, and he can make it look amazing when he needs to. He did it with Conte, he did it with Mourinho. Mm. You know, managers who had been in much more higher profile jobs, and he was able to show them that this could be amazing, and it turned out it wasn't. So I do believe that with Nagelsmann, I think Tottenham, if it was to do that, I think it would have been a case of that they would have literally rolled out the red carpet, got him in, got it done, and things like that. My gut feeling is that we will stick with, this stooge in Stellini, who I have no idea why he's there personally. I honestly feel that at this stage now, as we've seen, it
good
might
luck be with that, that Mark. We... I'd like Pep. Good luck with that one.
Yeah, on that one. If that does work, I'm gonna put a bet on. I'm gonna go for the lottery, because I think there's more chance of me getting the lottery than Pep coming to us. But you sort of look at it, and I think with Thomas Frank, you look at what he's done in terms of attacking football, bringing through younger players, not just bringing through younger players, but players from different leagues. You know, we're seeing that across up and down. He likes a target man. So, you know, Ivan Toney, you know, I don't think would be an issue in terms of Tottenham could go after him, you know, to replace Harry Kane, because that would be a cheap alternative. So, you know, everything there is a guy who I think is an up and coming that has the Premier League experience, because I've been going backwards and forwards with a couple of people who'd like Vincent Kompany. And to me, I just look at the whole Vincent Kompany situation, and I feel that, you could list managers who have been such a success, who have been lauded for what they've done in the Championship and then crumbled in the Premier League. And that is the problem
All these managers have done well under good owners and board, chairman. Thomas Frank has got a great chairman at Brentford. He wouldn't get out of Tottenham.
I couldn't possibly comment. I'm afraid that's not any, my area. Any player,
why does he think I like him? I'm envious.
Any promising manager, any young manager like Vincent Kompany that comes to Tottenham, they've got to deal with our board. They've got to deal with our chairman.
The only thing I was going to say, Brad, was that this is where I can see why a lot of managers aren't perhaps interested, because who are they going into? Is it going to be Scott Munn? Is it going to be Paratici? Or is it going to be Daniel Levy? Because at the moment, there are three people there and they don't know who they're going to be talking to. So, it'd be interesting to hear who you think.
I've got to a stage now where I don't think any manager. In fact, I would even argue that Pep Guardiola could come into Tottenham and fail. You know, it's just that we don't seem to back our managers enough. That's what I'm saying. When we need to, that's the problem. And you know, you look at Pochettino. He wanted a rebuild, but they never backed him, and then they ended up sacking him. You know, we could be, competing for the title this season if we'd have kept Pochettino and backed him. So any manager that comes in, I doubt whether they're going to be backed how they want to be backed. You know, we've gone for the two, why Tottenham Hotspur Football Club employed two of the most, decorated managers in world football, and yet they both failed, and both were gone within a couple of years. So I just really wonder, unless there's a massive buyout of the club by new owners, we get a new board and whatever, I don't really see it making any difference who we get in. I think I would not like to see someone like Enrique, because only because we've done that before. We've gone down that route. We've gone down the Mourinho route. We've gone down the Conte route. It's just another one, isn't it? Oh, another manager's won all this. Yeah, bung him in there. I would like to see Arne Slot, I guess, We didn't know much. We don't know much about him. We didn't know much about Ten Hag, and he seems to be doing pretty well at Man United after a pretty bad start. I wouldn't even, you know, I think, to be honest, I think every one of us could probably manage Celtic to either first or second in the Scottish Premier League, because I think it's not a very competitive league. But that said, I'm hearing good things about the Ascot de Lukaku.
For me, as long as we don't get Brendan Rodgers, that's the other one,
Brendan Rodgers. But then Brendan Rodgers, if you look at it, Brendan Rodgers has actually been at two big clubs. He's been at Liverpool and he's been at Celtic. He won the league with Celtic again.
I just think, I'm only putting the other side.
I'm not saying I want Brendan Rodgers. I'm putting the other side. He was only really one bad Gerard slip up from winning the title that season. He came pretty close. So
defensively, he doesn't really pay too much attention for me. And our defense needs attention because it's god awful.
I don't know. I've heard good things. I've heard bad. In fact, in the space of 24 hours, he turned from being with the fan base. He turned from being number one, to being no, don't go anywhere near him. Don't go near him, sort of thing. So I really don't know. It's got to stage where. Yeah, I do care, obviously, but I don't think it's going to make that much difference until we get new owners. That I will make the comment I made last Tuesday that why I think we're going to get Costa Lukaku, because one, he's Australian, two, Scott Marley's Australian, and one of our players is called Skippy. So there you go.
Terry Wright says, I'd like to see Potter, but don't think he'll want the job. I mean, he did turn us down before Brighton went to Chelsea, so maybe he would come.
Potter won't be given a chance, though, will he? Potter will want a few seasons, and he won't be given that.
Yeah, probably not. You know? But let's move on to something positive. Dan Juma. We'll also talk about Richarlison as well. He obviously missed that sitter, but he's getting in the positions and not shying away from that. Very unlucky with his goal that Dan Juma was slightly offside. Mm. But we called for Dan Juma. He delivered brilliant volley. Hopefully it's not another Steven Bergwijn situation where it's kind of just peters out. Although I do think with Steven Bergwijn, he was playing well. The ridiculous and disgraceful racism he got after the Anfield game, I think, shot his confidence to pieces. But Dan Juma looks like he wants to attack. He looks like he wants to go forward. He looks like he wants to get the ball. And he's not afraid to take a volley on. Yeah, and he's not afraid to take a volley. Against Brighton, he didn't touch the ball, but in chasing the goalkeeper back and putting a bit of effort in and a bit of speed in, galvanised the team to kind of press on that particular moment we got our goal. But on the other side, Brad, I don't want to rub too many salts into the wound because I know you've got a £10 bet, but Richarlison... He's getting into the right areas, but that was a shocker of a header.
Well,
Terry Wright has said we need Ted Lasso. I love Ted Lasso.
Yeah, there you go.
Believe. But Dan Juma, Richarlison.
Well, as I said earlier, Dan Juma has played 90 minutes of football and scored two goals. So, you've got to give him a chance. Look, he may not be the answer. Who knows? You know, but he does give it a go. He's taking his two goals well. He gets the crown involved, all that sort of stuff. You know, he wants to win, he talks well to the media. So, yeah, give him a chance. Let's see what he does. You know, we can't nothing really to lose, have we? You know,
I would stick him in for Kulusevski because he's just been poor.
Yeah, why not? Kulusevski's just off the wall at the moment. He's got, you know, I'm not saying he's, you know, like a lot of fans, oh, he's bad, he's rubbish now, but no, he's just gone off the boil and maybe a break will give him, you know, time to get it back. Richarlison, my bet is for he'd score over five Premier League goals. Well, he's had three goals disallowed for offside. So he's been a bit unlucky, to be fair. But that header, he should have put the header away.
I mean, it was a sitter of it. We've seen Harry Kane miss those ones like that. And the racism game, the game that Bergwijn got racially abused afterwards, Liverpool, he missed an absolute sitter onto the bar as well. So it happens, but you've got to be scoring goals like that. But he is getting into the right areas. He's looking for the ball. He's trying to make things happen. So a lot of time, any striker will tell you, you've heard it numerous times on punditry, TV and everything. When you're not getting the chances as a striker, that's the time to worry, because that means you're not making the runs. Mm. And that was why I was really worried about Son earlier in the season. He wasn't making the runs. Kane got the ball and he was on his toes rather than burning rubber to go to the last man. But Justin, Dan Juma, worthy of a start. Richarlison, what do you make of him?
Well, I feel sorry for Dan Juma because ultimately, I think we all sort of sat there, rolled our eyes and just didn't know what to think the moment that Conte said it was a club signing. It was like, brilliant, this is Jed Spence 2.0, this is Joe Roden 2.0, this is, I can't get you what you actually want, but I can give you a knockoff. How does that sound, you know? Yeah. It's trying to sell a unicycle without the wheel, you know, or you can still work with it, it's nice. But the one thing I would say about him, and you know, I think it's just a shame when it comes to the Bergwijn situation, was obviously the fact that, you know, as we see him, when they are given a chance, they can perform. And you know, I don't understand, you know, particularly with Dan Juma, after he had a brief little cameo against Brighton and didn't do too badly. I think he got involved in terms of Harry Kane's goal. And then he's on the bench again. And you're like, if you're trying to show these players that, you know, crap performances aren't acceptable, turning around to one of your better players and saying, well, you're going to sit on the bench because I'm going to stick with my crap players because I think they'll turn it around. To me, it's just been the definition of madness at Tottenham for years. I think the sad part of it being is, regardless of what he does, he won't be signed in the summer because we won't have seen enough of him because no manager.
I thought we'd signed him permanently. Was it a loan? Is it?
No, yeah, it's a loan with an option to buy at £42 million. Well, Tottenham ain't going to pay £42 million. Bear in mind, they've got to pay £40 million for Pedro Porro, and they've got to pay £30 million for Kulusevski. You know, I mean, I know I've heard this talk that they might not even do that. So,
if they don't buy Kulusevski and Kane leaves, then
but that's another thing. But I do, you know, as I said, from what I saw of Dan Juma, he did look good. He did look bright. He looked promising. Mm. Again, though, it just comes back to this. Is he going to be given a chance? Because, you know, the question being is, do I think he'll start against Newcastle? Nope.
Right.
He'll be on the bench. The team that went out today, or not today, on Saturday, well, if it's any different, I'll be stunned. But I believe it'll be the same team. And if anybody then sits there and thinks that Stellini should still be in that job, unless we win that game, I'm sorry, but
I can't see how we win against you because I'm so glad I'm on holiday and it's 2 o'clock and I'm at a Carvey, so I don't have to watch that shite. I'm so pleased.
I'll be honest, I'll probably just spend 90 minutes on the toilet so I can watch a different form of shite. It'll be more satisfying than watching that for 90 minutes.
It's 4:30 kick-off, isn't it? Well, the pub's open at 12. No,
it's 2 o'clock.
It's 2 o'clock.
I'll have to pre-pop.
I was pretty sure that, unfortunately, unless you're going to make your Carvery last. Oh, no, sorry. I stand heavily corrected. It is 2 o'clock. So
2 o'clock, yeah. Well, earlier, pub start.
You know.
I am very offended, Justin, because a Carvey is all you can eat. So I can definitely make that last a few hours. Thank you very much.
Yeah. But how are you going to cope at 4 o'clock when you're crying and still trying to get a spud in there?
Well, I do it every weekend, don't I?
I might go to the pub with my Spurs shirt and just a black armband, you know, in memory of the football club.
Terry Wright says, I'd like to see us change formation to a 4-3-3, Kulu playing as a cam and Dan Juma on the wing. Not sure Kulu has the pace to be a winger in the Premier League. I mean, that would help with something that Ian said earlier as well, with Kulu and Son better with the ball in front of them, getting it to the back to goal. But we know Terry, he ain't going to change it from 4 whatever we're playing at the moment to 4-3-3. Unfortunately,
it's Conte 2.0. This is what we're watching. Yeah. It's Conte 2.0. So all we've done is just turn around, cut the head off because it was a cheaper option to get rid of him, and then stuck with the stooge who's just going to follow his instructions. That's it. I mean, it makes me laugh. I remember seeing a thing on Twitter where they had Stellini there and you had the Scooby-Doo lot and they pulled his hat off and underneath his hat was Conte still. And it's like, actually, the more I watch this is more Conte than it used to be.
Yeah, I mean, let's move on. This will make you cry, Justin. I've said in particular those two, Lung Lei and Dai, because they're the ones recently been mentioned as getting new contracts. But as Ian said in the chat as well, Pedro Poir, I thought he had an absolute stinker, Pedro Poir. Completely at fault for the first goal. Doesn't help with Davinson Sanchez not being able to control the ball. But then trying to take someone on there in the middle of the pitch, two people on. I thought Sanchez was too slow to react when the ball get put through. Between them, Pedro Porro, absolutely all over the place. Slightly disagree with what Brad said about Lloris being at fault there. I think he probably thought it was going to go on the floor, try and spread him out. It just looks bad because it was a good finish. It was a good finish. And the third goal, Pedro Porro, long ball, completely missed the flight of the bounce, then hasn't made any kind of a challenge. Dyer stepped off on, I think it was the one where Romero tried the little back heel and all of that, and then Dyer stepped off. But that's a common theme. And Lung Lei hasn't really set the world alight. So, Brad, other than using C words, what do you think of all three of these players? And if we're trying to achieve things, signing up Dyer and Lung Lei onto new contracts is not the way to go. And if we do that, there's no chance of winning anything next season.
Well, I thought when they signed Lung Lei on a with no obligation to buy it, it was just basically because they couldn't get Bastoni or whoever they wanted.
But we're talking about a contract and buying him, and it just...
Yeah, it's like, well, I'm not saying he's not a bad defender, don't get me wrong, but he's certainly not what we need to be looking higher than what we're actually doing. As for Dyer, well, managers seem to like him. I mean, Dyer's problem is the fact that he needs to be boring. He either does really, really good things, or he either does really, really shit things. And I think if you look at someone like Michael Dawson was definitely not the world's best defender, but he was consistent.
I think with Dyer standing off, he's so terrified it might hit his hand and go for a penalty. Therefore, he's not doing anything.
But that's got to be a coaching thing, isn't it? That's got whoever's coaching the defence has got to say, what are you doing? I mean, they go through these games, don't they? Every day, the next Monday or the Tuesday, they go through the videos of games. Surely they're saying, why are you backing off there? Why are you backing off? Why are you backing off?
It comes back to the what we were talking about earlier. Why carry on picking him? And you know,
there's no one else. Who else is there? Tanganga or Sanchez?
I guess so, but it's just...
You know?
Yeah.
Well, look, at least on the bright side, they were talking about giving them a 4-year deal. Now they're only talking about 3 years. So we've got a year off of it. So
that's what I like. Really about you, Brad. Full of positivity.
We'll get down to 2-1, and hopefully he'll then piss off.
Yeah. Terry Wright says about Poirier, can't defend. Don't know where he fits in the back four. Don't think he can play right back.
Well, this is going to be a problem with whoever the new manager is, isn't it? If you get a manager who wants to play four at the back.
The problem is, he's our only one as well. Emerson's injured. Jed Spence is long gone. Well, he's alone. Doherty is long gone. So he's the only one to play there. So Newcastle will be licking their lips at the prospect of Pedro Porro on that right hand side.
Well, that's even more of an argument to attack, isn't it?
But what do you think of the three of them? We talked about Romero earlier. Justin?
I'll separate. I'm going to go with the good, the bad, and the ugly in terms of this. Well, so the good out of the three.
We'll scrap the good, so just go with the bad.
from things I've seen, I think the problem with Pedro Porro is Pedro Porro, in a way, reminds me of the likes of when Gareth Bale was played at left back, and he was awful. Could not defend, absolutely couldn't. And Harry Redknapp turned around and went, stick him up there. Stick him up there and do what you do. Try and see if you can get it well there. And he did. And I almost look at Pedro Porro as somebody who, the problem being is that for his role to work as it did in the sporting team, was that he had people behind him that almost just said, right, you go forward. And if you lose a ball at any point, it's not a problem because we're here to protect. And it almost what happened was the midfield would spread out, the defence would spread out, and it would sort of be like a 3-5-2, but you knew full well that he was going to go up with them as well, so you almost could take him and the other one out of the equation and almost go with a 3-3-2 almost and have it sort of working from that aspect. But the problem being is that this is a guy who's come in for Conte is not there, so he's now with Conte 2.0, knowing that Conte 2.0 isn't going to be there, thinking what on earth have I signed up for? Because what am I going to be going? Because if I go 4-4-2, I'm not, as Brad rightly said, he's not a right back. He wasn't brought in to be a right back. So how on earth we can then turn around and be critical of somebody who's not very good at being a right back, you know, when we knew that when we bought him. So if we're going to go down that route, you'd have to almost push him up the pitch, you know, and turn him into like a winger and say, right, if we're going to go 4-4-2, you know, even Tanganga, to me, if you're going 4-4-2, you would have to go with, you know, Longley and Romero. You would then go with Tanganga. You would go with, you know, I don't know. Why not try Dyer there? There's, you know, he can be rubbish at another position, to be fair. you know, and you go with that as a back four. And then you almost play Pedro Porro up, you know, on that side. And whether you play Kulusevski behind Son and Kane or however that you want to do it, you know, Richarlison perhaps as a two up top. And then you have, you know, Porro and Son and Kulusevski and, you know, Skip or just, you know, something like that that could give him less defensive responsibilities. Because at the moment, what I've seen of Pedro Porro is a guy who's brilliant at going forward, god awful at the back, right?
Well, Terry thinks he has trouble beating his man too. He loses the ball a lot. But I think if you're trying to be positive, you're going to lose the ball a lot.
Yeah, but the thing is, I think, what was it? Someone turned around, I think I read a stat, he put in about 13 or 14 balls into the box. Well, at least he's putting opportunities there for Kane, for Richarlison, for, you know, whoever to get onto that. So it's giving an outlet from that side, which we're sadly not seeing a lot of from Kulusevski.
It's decision-making, isn't it? Because like Romero with his rash challenges, decision-making. There's no way after Sanchez gives him the ball, that the only place that should have been going was down the line.
It is, but ultimately, it's that forward-thinking side of it. And the problem being is yes, this is something that he will have to learn for being in the Premier League. You don't get that extra couple of seconds. You have to either hoof it or be special with what you do with it. In terms of Longley, I think Brad was absolutely right. That was a plaster that was put on because they couldn't be bothered yet again to get the actual centre-back that they went in for.
Well, we wanted Bastoni and he didn't want to come. So that's all true, that's fine. But this summer, go for him again. If you don't want to come, fine.
Okay, but I get what you're saying with that, Chris. But the problem you have with that, why go for somebody who doesn't want to come? If it is made very, very clear you're not interested, you don't want to go to Tottenham, fine. There were lots of other defenders out there that were suitable. Okay, you know, why did they not go for Amric Laporte? Why, you know, why not go for John Stones? Why not go for players like that who were potentially available? Lisandro Martinez has not done a bad job in terms of Man United. He was available. You know, we could sit there. Sven Botman, less than 40 million quid, a cheaper option than Bastoni. He's gone to Newcastle and there's been a revelation at Newcastle. So I don't buy this whole, if it is a case of that they want Bastoni, they're going to get Bastoni. Because if Bastoni doesn't want to go there, which I can't blame him, why then even have that in the mix?
Didn't want to leave Inter.
I think he didn't. Yeah, but that's the same thing, though, isn't it? It doesn't really matter whether he wants to stay Inter or not. He didn't want to come to Tottenham, which isn't very difficult. And then going on to, by far, you know, somebody who I think doesn't get enough criticism is Eric Dyer. I mean, I'm sorry, the guy is, you know, and apologies, I'm going to say it again, he is horseshit. You know, he's horseshit in midfield. He's horseshit in defence. But again, you know, unfortunately, and this is why I found it very, very odd that they highlighted Davinson Sanchez, because I sat there and thought, well, hang on a minute. If by the fans' logic, you're going after Davinson Sanchez, can you then explain to me why it is you're not going after Eric Dyer? Because Eric Dyer defines failure at that football club. Somebody who has gotten too big for their boots, has reached what they feel is the peak, taken a paycheck, and is just comfortable knowing, like a lot of those players do, I don't need to worry because I will outlast the manager. And then the next one comes in. You know, that to me is somebody who I feel that, whilst I don't agree anyone should have gotten the level of criticism that Davinson Sanchez did, I don't see why anyone is giving Eric Dyer a completely free pass unless they're fearful that he's going to come through the stands and come and get them. You know, that's kind of the only thing that I can think with that. But to me, this is somebody who, if the club was serious and got him out the door, that to me would be like a, okay, we're serious, we're going to need players. If I honestly, as I said, if I honestly see a thing come up saying we are delighted to announce we have added Eric Dier, a 3-year contract.
Well, I think you're going to have to prepare yourself.
Unless we sell him, because he will get more money for him if we give him a 3-year contract.
Yeah, I mean, Terry says he needs to be moved out this summer, but
Chris, I have got a question based on what Brad said. Please excuse my French. Who in the right mind is going to buy that heap of shit? I mean, honestly, can you see? It says no one.
There'll be a team near the bottom, like a Bournemouth, for example, that might want to
really?
Get someone like.
I think after Saturday, they might give that a miss. To be fair, Everton are probably the best shot at trying again.
But you might get someone like some manager, like you were saying earlier about someone coming into Tottenham, because I can do a job there. Someone might think, oh, I can make Eric Dier a great defender.
It's been too long.
I was going to say, the only thing I would say with that is that he's seen off 4 managers, you know. But, you know, I mean, fool me once.
They all pick him. Even Gareth Southgate picks him in his squad.
Okay, we're not getting into Gareth Southgate, because that's another.
I don't have a huge problem if Dier stays there, but as the kind of understudy to the main 3 centre backs or 2 centre backs, but
he's got to go, because he defines so much of what is wrong with that football club. You know, and ultimately, you need to, you know, we've seen it before when a manager is backed, deadwood is cleared out no matter what. They started to do it with Conte, because Eric Dier is now really, is now a couple of clubs behind Dele Alli, right? The owners desperately want to keep him. They were desperate for it to work. You know, they were desperate for him to get back to where he was. He, year after year after year, he failed. He was then booted out to Everton, booted out to Besiktas, and is now booted out to the job centre. Right, this is where we are at with Eric Dier. What will happen is he'll probably go to, you know, Sheffield United when they get promoted. They'll realise he's dog shit, and then he'll go off to play in the Armenian First League, and, you know, he'll get caught snorting coke off a hooker's what's-its, you know, and then he'll be out on his ass waiting for another job. So do it now. Get him out.
He wouldn't do that, because he'd have to go towards her, wouldn't he? And he just stands off all the time. So
he'd be going further and further.
Yeah. But yeah, Brad, is the season now over? This is the league table. Liverpool are 2-0 up against Leeds at the moment, so that's where they are. We're 5th, 53 points, but... Oh, look at this. We've just lost to Bournemouth. Our next 5 games, Newcastle away, Man United at home, Liverpool away, Palace away, Aston Villa, who have come up from nowhere, away. And there's only 7 games left, and 4 of those are... So the only one there on paper, Crystal Palace at home, is the only one that you could possibly say we're favourites to win that, and we were favourites to beat Bournemouth. I mean, if we can somehow get a fair good amount of pointage out of those Newcastle, United, Liverpool, Villa, then our season can continue and we can dream about top 4. But if, like I suspect, we lose all of those...
First of all, for me, the season ended when we lost to Sheffield United in the FA Cup. That's when my season ended. Then we said to ourselves, we looked at this fixtures coming up, Newcastle away, Man United home, Liverpool away, for all their 3 difficult fixtures. This was before Villa had the sudden resurgence, so let's forget Villa for the time being. So we thought, well, that's okay, because we've got Man City and we've got Chelsea, yeah, we've got those and that. But then we've got Leicester away, Wolves away, we've got Nottingham Forest at home, we've got Brighton at home, we've got Southampton away, we've got Bournemouth at home, Everton away. These are winnable games. If we can get ahead of steam up and get a load of points, we might give ourselves a cushion to go into those 3 games where we don't have to win them or not, you know. But what's happened? We lost at Leicester. We lost at Wolves. We drew against Southampton. We drew against Everton, and we lost against Bournemouth. The only surprise result there was beating Brighton, to be fair. And we were lucky.
I was at that game, and I still don't know how we won that.
VAR, it was basically VAR. They got it wrong. We got the game that way. So all these so-called easy games that we had to, get a few points in the bank, get a few games in the bank, and then we can take these three really difficult games. We've got nothing. We've got, let's see, 7 points, 7 or 8 points out of that, when we should be looking at 15, 16, 17 points. This season's gone for me. Last season, by now we were starting to play a lot better football, and Arsenal, who are our rivals for that top four spot, were falling off crap. Yeah. So this time, Man United are playing well. Newcastle, all right. Newcastle lost on the weekend. They're playing well. Liverpool are starting to put some results together. Brighton are doing well. Aston Villa, as you say, are doing well. Out of all those teams, they're all starting to do well. What team isn't doing so well? Us.
Yeah.
So, there's just no way. I don't think there's any way.
Leicester aren't doing that good.
I think we're going to be above Leicester. But we still managed to lose 4-1 to them, though, didn't we?
We did manage to get spanked by them.
Terry says 7th or 8th for him. He doesn't see us in many games in the schedule. Playing like this so negatively, I can't really see us winning. I mean, we might get lucky against Newcastle, Villa, Liverpool, because they'll attack us. So that lends itself to a counter-attacking team, I guess. But at Newcastle getting battered by Villa, they're going to be angry. And good teams don't lose more than one in a row. And I can see them taking their frustrations out on us. And it can be a rugby score for me. Manchester United under Ferguson never lost more than one in a row. They lost the game before they went to the City Ground, Nottingham Forest, and battered them 8-1. The amount of times that they lost the game, and then the next game they went and battered someone. And we're a soft touch. Dr. Tottenham's coming to St. James's Park. I can see Justin us getting absolutely annihilated if Newcastle are in the mood and us not being able to cope. And normally I'm quite positive. Oh, we can win there. We've just got a bit of keep it tight. Don't do anything silly and then we can win. But
keep
now
it tight, I stupid. Brilliant.
Yeah, but I can't see that anymore. All I can see is Newcastle destroying us.
To be fair, someone asked me how many points are we going to get out of the next three games, and that's easy. None. Not being funny. We can't even turn over Bournemouth, who are fighting for their lives. We can't even turn over Southampton, who are fighting for their lives. We can't turn over Leicester, who are fighting for their lives. And yet people are thinking we're going to get points. Absolutely not. We're going to go to St. James's Park. We're going to do what we always do. We might go score, and then we'll sit back, and they'll swing probably, I reckon, 3-1. We've then got United.
I'd take a 3-1 loss. I think it's going to be a lot more than that if Newcastle are in the mood.
The club, this is where the interesting part is, because this is why I'm so surprised that the club haven't just done something. Because what they don't realise is, as I said, I reckon we'll lose to Newcastle, we'll lose to United, and we will then lose to Liverpool as well. The next game is a Palace game, and one of the things that is going around quite heavily on social media at the moment is the movement that's been created by Change for Tottenham, who are arranging on the Palace game to not so much protest, but you're going to have a bigger sort of, following with regards to that. They've got quite a few of the big hitters. I saw The Last Word on Spurs actually talking about it, and some of their panel talking about it and getting behind it. And the problem that they've now done is they've created this nucleus of finally people coming together with that. And if we lose those three games, that's just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And come the Palace game, when you have got people marching to the ground with banners saying Change for Tottenham, that isn't going to look good, because it will be the first time in a very long time that the club will actually look even worse than they do now. So if it was me, I know they won't, but I feel that a change, almost Stellini out, Mason in, if you're going to do something, I think that buys you a bit more time, at least maybe gets you a bounce, you know, new manager balance, if that makes sense, for the Newcastle game. But
it's like, haven't been moved yet, because that's the day of the coronation, is it? Is it the Saturday? Is the coronation?
Well, the 8th, is it?
No, I was going to say the coronation.
Yeah, the coronation's the Monday. I get to have a lie in.
Is it the Monday?
Not like, yeah, I believe it got altered. But yeah, no, we're playing. It's the basically Saturday the 6th of May. Mm. We're playing Palace, and as I've read, the change for Tottenham are going to be putting together, a sort of like a style of protest that is more sort of aimed at getting people on board. That actually, not so much Enoch out. I think it's more aimed at, you know, a change really needs to be made in terms of the club from top to bottom. And not being funny, if we're going into that on the back of three more defeats, which I can't see anything bar three more defeats, that is going to be really, really massive. And it could be quite a toxic sort of environment to be going into. So
rather stupidly, I think we might be able to get a point against Man United, but.
Well, that is probably the most optimistic I think I've ever heard you, Brad, if I'm being really honest, based on our club at the moment.
Terry Wright says, Eddie Howe, manager of the year for me, done a terrific job. I think it's between him, Arteta, and even though it's only been short-term, Unai Emery's transformed Villa as well. Thomas Frank deserves a mention as well. And Gary O'Neill, if they do survive, brilliant job there as well. Never been in management before, but yeah. Eddie Howe definitely has to be out there. I'm going to cough. Hang on. Oh, dear. Fog in my throat. But that's pretty much it. Not really much else to talk about other than just depressing stuff again. And to be fair, we've both all got lives to lead. But yeah,
I've got places to go and cry. So yeah. I'm just going to. I'm sure the Spurs will bring out the Lucas Moura hat trick at some point from the Champions League.
That's the anniversary that's coming up, isn't it?
I was going to say, I can imagine that will probably be. Yeah. I reckon they'll name that Lucas Moura Day or something like that. Yeah. You know, and it's just something that we get to relive as close as we'll ever get to a trophy.
Yeah, it just remains for me to say thanks to everybody who's watched and got involved in the chats. Please hit the like, please hit the subscribe and the notification bell. Also, thanks to the great guests as well, Harry Scarf as well, who's got his show, Scarfy Spurs Talk, live now. So jump over and watch that. His link is also in the description. And Brad and Justin. Brad, Blue Sofa Songs, what can people expect from that? Brilliant.
Well, show. Yes, if you're not aware of it, Blue Sofa Songs is me writing songs effectively and recording them on the music software. So all the lyrics are mine, all the guitar playing is mine, all the drum loops are mine, all the bass player is mine. I've now got a keyboard, so it's basically my own songs about personal things, about things
like regular day Dave Grohl. I think he played all of his
He did indeed. There's a bit of politics in there, a bit of politics which you may or may not agree with.
No Spurs songs. What are you on about?
Blue Sofa Songs, if you're not aware, is sorry, totally different from football. It's got nothing to do with football whatsoever. There is a song on there called A Love We All Know, which is loosely based on following a sporting team. So, it's just a little love of mine to get songs on YouTube. So if you go over there, see what you reckon, leave a comment, click like, share, subscribe, all the other stuff. And also click like, subscribe to these guys as well. Chris's show and his magic show and Justin, whatever stuff you're about to tell us about.
Yeah, I mean, make sure you check out Blue Sofa Songs. Brilliant channel. Likewise, all things Tottenham, Justin. What can people expect on there?
Yeah, so I think if people think this I may have said things that are a little edgy, then, and I'm not sure. Maybe not watch all things Tottenham because I think it's going to be. I'll be honest. I've sort of read our group chat and. It's something that, as I said, it's a little bit more sort of off-piste in terms of probably being a little bit more colourful in terms of our view of Spurs and frustration that's built up over the years. But as a bit of banter, it's good laugh. So, yeah, as I said, or it'll be with yourself, Chris, or pretty much. I do a lot as well with Marlon as well. So, I'd say give those boys a like as well. And yeah, thank you so much for having us on.
Oh, no problem. Pleasure having all three of you guys on, Harry included in that as well. But yeah, thanks to everybody for watching, all the comments, all the likes and subscribes. Please keep them coming in. Recently just broke 300, so it'd be great to get on the road to 400. Head over to Chris's Magic as well. That's on Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. UK time. Normally it's a trick. It's a tutorial this week. So started on that as well. Blue Sofa Songs, that's every second Friday. Is it this Friday or is it the following?
Yeah, new song, hopefully new song this Friday. I've got the basics of it done, already recorded, so I'll just be adding to that.
So that'll be this Friday and then every two after that. Mm-hmm. Carl Simpson has said next song is the thrash metal track version of Elton John's Daniel.
Copyright, I'd like to do a few.
That would be interesting to see, if I'm honest.
Yeah, and then also jump over All Things Tottenham as well and catch Justin on there. I mean, normally I say, come on, you Spurs, and with all the enthusiasm I can muster, but I'm so there's no shows for a little while now. There'll be shorts and everything, and I'm also on TikTok. Yes, I'm one of those. I'll get a lot more views on TikTok than
You'll find me on TikTok on YouTube, as well.
So it's very much an ego boost. So check me out on there as well. Let's Talk Tottenham. But no shows on here this format for a couple of weeks. Thank God I'm on holiday. Could not have timed that better. But there will be shorts and everything like that. And I'll be watching the games, Newcastle excluded. But thanks to everybody for watching. Make sure you check out all of these great other channels as well. Scarfy Spurs Talk as well. That's live at the moment. So jump over there when this is finished. And as always, come on, you Spurs.
Come on, you Spurs.
Thanks so much for watching, for everybody who joined in the live chat and added comments. Before you go, please leave a like and hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Also, please hit that notification bell. That'll give you a notification every time we're about to go live, and it's all completely free. For those who missed the live show, you can catch this whenever you want on Let's Talk Tottenham's YouTube channel. Please also hit the like, subscribe and notification bell. And everybody, please leave feedback, comments, suggestions in the comments section on the YouTube videos. For those of you who listen to the audio podcast, thank you so much for listening. Anyone who wants that audio podcast, you can pick that up wherever you get your podcast from. We're back Mondays, 7:30 p.m. UK time, and Fridays, 12:30 p.m. UK time. Alternatively, if you go to Twitter at Let's Talk Tottenham, Instagram, Let's Talk Tottenham Podcast, you'll find all the information there. Anyone who wants something a little bit different, also do a magic show. So I do one trick a week, which drops Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. UK time. Chris's Magic on YouTube is where you'll find that. But in the meantime, come on, you Spurs.